Thanks for listening to the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 12 to 3 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Here's Howie Roseman, who runs the Philadelphia Eagles.
You know, we've been so fortunate over the last couple of years to have two top 15 quarterbacks in Carson and Nick. And we've spent a lot of time discussing this internally and with him. And we've decided to let Nick become a free agent.
So he's going to become a free agent. And you would think Nick Foles, who absolutely clean off the field, right? Like, I know him a little bit. Everyone I knows him says he is the real deal. As a football player, he's won a Super Bowl. He's led a team to the playoffs the last 2 years. Plus, he had that one other year in Philadelphia, you know, with a completely different system when he was outstanding. Obviously, he had the down years when he was playing for Jeff Fisher and the St. Louis Rams. And he did get off to a faulty start 2 years ago before he led him to a Super Bowl. And last year, there were some hits, there were some misses. But you would think, you know, he's still in his early 30s. He's made a bunch of money. The league needs quarterbacks. Hey, pick a spot. He can go anywhere. Isn't that what we hear all the time? What if I told you the market for Nick Foles is three teams? Think about that. Three teams. You'd think a Super Bowl champion quarterback would have his pick of destinations. But this is a lot like a five-star recruit. You know, like, only one guy can go to Alabama. Only one guy can go to Clemson. Especially when you play quarterback. Take a look at the National Football League and you're like, well, how many teams need a quarterback? How many do? Does Buffalo have their quarterback? I don't know, but they're certainly not bringing in Nick Foles after they moved mountains and got rid of Tyrod Taylor, whatever, both of them, and got Josh Allen. Three teams, the Jaguars, the Dolphins, the Redskins, right? The Jaguars make sense because clearly they don't believe in Blake Bortles. He got benched last year. He lost the locker room. And, oh, yeah, by the way, his old quarterback coach, John DeFilippo, is now in Jacksonville after losing his job halfway through his first year with the Minnesota Vikings as offensive coordinator. Then there's the Dolphins, right? The Dolphins have a new coaching staff. Brian Flores comes in from New England. He knows firsthand how good Foles can be because he was on the defensive side of the ball when they couldn't stop the Philadelphia Eagles 2 years ago in the Super Bowl. Ryan Tannehill's been oft injured, and even when he's been healthy, does anyone actually believe Ryan Tannehill is the answer to the who can finally bring us to the promised land since Dan Marino? And then, of course, there's the Redskins, where Alex Smith suffered a gruesome injury, broke his leg so badly there's now talk that he may never play football again. And then Colt McCoy replaced him, and he broke his leg. And it's not like the Eagles would have to trade him in division because he's now, as Howie Roseman just stated, a free agent set to walk. Like, think about it. I know that we operate under this presumption that the league needs quarterbacks, and it does. Part of this does play into, hey, Nick Foles is good, but he's not great. He's not a top 15 guy. I'd actually be interested if I could add one more in the Cincinnati Bengals, what exactly they're going to do with Andy Dalton coming off injury. But Andy Dalton has been successful in the regular season, and they seem to be pod committed to him. The Broncos are no longer an option because they traded for Joe Flacco. The Giants said earlier today that Eli is their guy and they're probably going to draft a quarterback, try and draft an heir apparent. So what are the options? Jaguars sound like a good idea and they're currently projected to be $4 million over the cap, but now Marcel Darius is restructuring his deal, clear up $5 million in cap space. They'll have to cut Blake Bortles to sign him. That's the most likely and most obvious, But boy, it gets tight money-wise. The Dolphins have $8 million in cap space. They're probably going to cut Devontae Parker, who's been a bust for them, oft-injured wide receiver. Opens up another $9 million. Cutting Tannehill would give them additional $13 million on top of that. So they have plenty of money, but most people thought that the Dolphins are rebuilding and are planning on punting towards next year's draft, which is supposed to be better. Maybe they sign Foles and make it a top-heavy deal, but does Foles want to go somewhere where they're rebuilding? And then you got Alex Smith and the Washington Redskins. They have $16 million in cap space, but they need to fill out a roster. And in truth, the only way for the Skins thing to work is for Alex Smith to say that he's retired. And none of these guys ever want to say they're retired, right? There's 32 teams in the NFL. If I said how many opportunities do you think Nick Foles, still in his prime age-wise, a Super Bowl champion quarterback who led the Eagles to the playoffs would have, you would say, oh, at least half the league needs a quarterback. But do they? Like, I don't think the Raiders love Derek Carr, but are they going to blow up the Derek Carr situation and write a check for him to walk away and take a cap hit of, I think, $5 million in order to get Nick Foles? Probably not. The Chargers have their quarterback, so do the Chiefs. The Titans seem committed to Marcus Mariota for the time being. The Texans have their quarterback. The Colts have their quarterback. The Browns have their quarterback. The Steelers have just said there's only one adult in that room, and that's Ben Roethlisberger. The Ravens are going to a completely different style of football. The Jets have their quarterback. Bills, Patriots, all have their guy. That's the AFC. I could go through the NFC, but it's much the exact same thing. As much as you think the league needs quarterbacks in various stages of development, Dak Prescott's going to get paid. Mitchell Trubisky led them to the playoffs. I don't love him, but they scored 138 points more than their opposition, and he apparently is what they desire. We know the Vikings are pot committed to Kirk Cousins. He's not better than Aaron Rodgers, and Matt Stafford's the guy in Detroit. Matt Ryan's been an MVP. Drew Brees nearly led the Saints to the last two Super Bowls, if not for crazy endings and crazy plays. Does Carolina make sense? I guess, but is he going to sign to start for a couple of games? Like, you go through it. Tampa, they seem to be all in on Jameis. And Bruce Arians was brought in with one sole purpose in mind. Save Jameis Winston. And not better than Russell Wilson. I'd prefer him to Jared Goff, but Goff is on a rookie contract and he's only a couple years in. The Cardinals have the choice of Josh Rosen or maybe Kyler Murray. And the Niners spent a bunch of money on Jimmy Garoppolo. Isn't it crazy? If you woke up this morning and you said, Nick Foles can sign anywhere you'd want, you'd think 15, 20 offers. Might be three. Crazy, right?
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at noon Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Fran McCaffrey, head coach of the Iowa Hawkeyes, who have won 21 games this year. They fell to Ohio State last night on the road in Columbus. What happened late in the game?
Well, it was an intense game, Doug, as you would have expected. You know, both teams are coming down the stretch and, you know, trying to maximize our opportunities. It was a physical game. You know, there were some calls that I took exception to, but the game ended. We lost, and I let my emotions get the best of me. You know. Yeah, I tried not to do it on the spot and get thrown out of the game with a minute to go or 30 seconds to go. And I was walking to the locker room, and I said something to the official that I was displeased with and shouldn't have done it. It wasn't right, and I apologize for it. But again, Doug, I mean, you know me. I'm a passionate guy about my team. I'm going to fight for my guys. If I see something I disagree with, I'm going to fight for them. I just got to do it a different way.
Yeah, And I get it. And I think the language in a hallway or in the locker room is different than most the public is used to hearing. I honestly think that it was more than language. It was you were alleged to have said something about cheating. Do you feel like you got cheated?
No, I don't. And again, it goes back to, you know, I shouldn't have said that. No, I don't. And I think it's important to get that out there because that's unfair.
What's it like? And it's been reported that you've been suspended 2 games now. Is that correct?
Correct.
What's that like when you're like, you're already like, look, the team trying to get the NCAA tournament, get to the finish line. Big Ten's incredibly difficult. You've had some remarkable wins. You win on a corner bank three in Rutgers. Bohannon's bailed you guys out a couple of times. And your boss calls you and says, I have to have you not coach your team for 2 games because of something you said to an official in a hallway after the game. What's that like for you emotionally?
Well, you know, it's not something you're happy about, but I think what you have to do is you have to have respect for your boss and, you know, go along with the decision, you know, and not fight it. I'm a guy that approaches this thing with great intensity. And I think Gary Barta appreciates that. And he appreciates the fight that I have every day that I bring in recruiting, in practice. And he loves that about me. But he, you know, doesn't appreciate what I said last night. And again, like I said, I apologize for that. So, you know, I met with the team and I said, hey, this is what it's going to be. This is how we're going to approach these next, you know, few days in preparation for the next 2 games. And we're going to stay together and we're going to continue to compete.
Listen, if you want offline to Iowa City, I'll berate some officials for you. I'll sit in.
You'd probably be pretty good at it.
Huh? I'd be pretty good.
You'd be pretty good at it.
Hey, I do want to ask you about Jordan Bohannon. Okay. I mean, he's having a ridiculous season. Like, look, if you look on paper, he's averaging 11 and a half a game, but it's the ability to hit big shots down the stretch. You ever been a part of something like this? I mean, you've been coaching a long time.
I don't think I've ever seen anything like this, Doug. I mean, we had a stretch. This would have been my second year. Matt Gaten's caught fire, and we beat Indiana, was ranked 15. We beat Wisconsin, ranked 11. He's making every shot. But I think the thing that you're referring to is Jordan's uncanny ability to make shots in the last, forget about 30 seconds, how about the last 10 seconds, the last 2 seconds. He's done it basically at Penn State. He did it at Indiana. He did it against Indiana at home. He did it against Northwestern. And it big shots at Rutgers. Now, Joe hit the game winner, Joe Wieskamp. But it's really remarkable. But again, you know, I've had the advantage of watching him grow up with my son Connor. And ironically, they played together when they first were friends. Then they were adversaries at the high school level. So I saw him play in spring games, in summer league games, in fall tournaments, AAU, Iowa Barnstormer practices. So I basically watched this kid grow up, and you could see it. He's been doing it his whole life. He's got that gene, and you know, a lot was said, you know, last week when I said this, but when we signed him, they said, you know, what did you see in him? Because we were his only BCS offer.
Right.
I said, I see a lot of stuff in him. You know, he's got that ability to create enough space to get a shot off. He pulls right in your face, just like Steph. He shoots from 30 feet like Steph. And, you know, at the time, he's like, you know, you're comparing some 6-foot kid from Cedar Rapids, Iowa, to the MVP of the NBA. You know, you're out of your mind.
But it's not crazy. By the way, I want to plug this real quick. We got to run. May 3rd, 2019. I've actually emceed this. Maybe I was so bad I didn't get invited back.
all the coaches, Division I coaches in Iowa. You have your Coaches versus Cancer Gala. You can check that out online. Franny, I'm sorry to pinch you on time. I know you have a press conference. I really appreciate you joining us, especially after the news of the day and the loss last night. You know, I love you, even if you have to sit the next two. I'll watch it on the couch with you. Thanks so much for joining us.
I appreciate it, Doug. Love you too, my man. Take care.
All right. That's Fran McCaffrey, head coach of Iowa.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at noon Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific.
I find it really interesting at the Combine, all of these different GMs, coaches that are there. John Elway has spoken as well, presidents of organizations. They all kind of give a state of their own personal union, and oftentimes they're supposed to say nothing, but a lot of these guys like to hear their own voice, and they say a little bit more than they should or put something in a way in which they shouldn't. Like, here's Cardinals GM Steve Keim. Remember, Steve Keim last year hired a coach, drafted a quarterback, and the coach was gone before we ever, you know, clock struck midnight on the first year. First year of that, they fired the offensive coordinator mid-year, head coach end of the year. Here's Steve Keim talking about his quarterback, Josh Rosen.
Well, I mean, I think what Cliff said was trying to avoid bulletin board material. I think if you're a Texas Tech, I would have said the same thing about an Oklahoma quarterback. But, you know, again, it's still early in the process. We haven't even gone through a full evaluation at all the positions. So really, it's again, too early to say. Is Josh Rosen our quarterback? Yeah, he is right now for sure.
He is right now for sure. Right, that is an oxymoronic sentence if I ever heard one. You guys know oxymoron statements, you know, civil war. And how can a war be civil? Some people say military intelligence. But he is right now for sure. Right now, for sure. But because right now becomes a loaded term. Well, what about in the long-term future? And in fairness, I've seen this quote. I've now heard the quote. I haven't heard the follow-up in the, okay, what? How would you characterize right now? How long is right now? You know, he did not say for the foreseeable future. He did not say, you know, for the entire year. He left it open and ambiguous, and on the other hand, he tried to close the door on it. My guess is, like, look, if you're the Arizona Cardinals, and the Cardinals have the makings, they have some of the, they got some of the skill position things down, right? You got Patrick Peterson on defense. On offense, you got David Johnson. I like Christian Kirk. Heck, Larry Fitzgerald coming back as a slot wide receiver, an old head, like that too, but they need massive help on their offensive line. And I'm not a huge Josh Rosen guy in terms of the warm and making you feel warm and fuzzy inside. That's not who Josh is. But Josh Rosen looks and feels like an NFL quarterback if you give him time. I don't believe him to be being honest, though. Here's when I hear a dishonest statement, I kind of shut down on everything else you've said. Ramos, if you could you re-rack that real quick? Because I'm gonna point out the lie as soon as you hear it. Here's Steve Keim, general manager of the Cardinals, with a lie followed by the truth.
Well, I mean, I think what Cliff said was trying to avoid bulletin board material. I think if you're a Texas Tech, I would have said the same thing about an Oklahoma quarterback. But, you know, again, it's still early in the process. We haven't even gone through a full evaluation at all the positions. So really, it's again, too early to say. Is Josh Rosen our quarterback? Yeah, he is right now for sure.
He is right now for sure. The lie is in that we haven't evaluated all positions. Excuse me? What's today's date? Today is February 27th, is it not? That's today's date? All right. When was the last time the Arizona Cardinals played a football game? You guys want to go? You don't need to look it up if you don't want to. Arizona Cardinals last game. Do you remember who it was against, where it was? Yeah, well, it was against the Seattle Seahawks. It was actually way more competitive than it probably should have been. It was weird. They didn't call a timeout at the end of the game. They just kind of let the clock run. They let Seahawks run down the clock. It was like, we wanted to show we could be competitive, but we didn't want to win the game. That was December 30th, 2018. Okay, you had to fire your coach. Okay, you had to get a new staff. You mean to tell me in the 2 months since your last football game, you haven't evaluated every position on your roster? That's a lie. That's a complete fabrication. Now, if you sat down with, and even if you try to tell me, like, well, we haven't sat down with Cliff Kingsbury and gone through every position, that's not true. It's not possible that that's true. I know for a fact that every organization in the NFL, the second the season's over, the first thing they do is exit meetings. And exit meetings are about reviewing each position. And then you go back and you all right, let's look at the contracts, let's look at the players. You know, you have people specifically on staff. It's called quality control. Their only job is to help you research every position on a daily basis. You mean to tell me for 2 months they didn't do anything? Either they're so grossly inept that Steve Keim should never be around a football team, which I will open up as possible, but not plausible. Or you're just lying to us, which is fine. And that's why we have an oxymoronic statement. He is for sure right now, or he is right now for sure. Wait, he is right now or he is for sure? Which is it? Which is it?
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
We got Rick Bucher talking some NBA, and his line is not making a clicking sound. So it's not a Bleacher Report thing. It was just a Matt Miller thing. Rick Bucher joins us. Let's start with the Celtics. They get it handed to them at the hands of the Toronto Raptors, and somehow the Raptors, no one talks about them, but they're better than last year, and they may be the team we're discussing the least. But what are you hearing is wrong with the Celtics?
Well, essentially, it is what it's been for all season long in terms of guys understanding their roles, embracing their roles, and willing to play them. And, you know, Kyrie has certainly hinted at it, whether he was doing them a service of putting it out there. But, look, they changed the team. They added some guys in Gordon Hayward and Kyrie Irving. And I don't think it's Kyrie's necessarily. I think probably Gordon's is a little bit more of a rub. But there are guys that are losing minutes that were instrumental in leading this team to the conference finals last year that do not have the same role. And they're struggling with the new role and the new place in the hierarchy. And the effort and the collective synchronicity of this team has suffered as a result. And so every now and then they put all of that aside when they're challenged. But from a game-to-game, day-to-day basis, it's still a rub that Brad Stevens has not been able to figure out.
No question. The Hayward thing is interesting. Everyone wants to talk about Kyrie, but here you have Hayward, who was the big free agent, and they got him.
Yeah.
I think his relationship with Brad, whether or not that's... I think what happens is, like, oh, well, he's Brad's boy. But the truth is, like, look, he was an all-star. And you're at this point where you're like, well, the more we play him, maybe the better he plays. And if we don't play him, he plays worse. But we're also paying him all this money. Like, it's a really hard thing to decide, isn't it?
It is, but you're looking at it from the perspective of the coach and the public and everyone on the outside. And I know you know this, Doug, that when you're on a team and you look across the way, you know who can play and who can't. Nobody begrudges Kyrie Irving and his role or the money he's making or the attention that he gets. Nobody begrudges him that because he's special. He can do something, quite honestly, that nobody on that team, nobody else on that team, and maybe nobody else in the league can do. They look at Kyrie and say, man, if we had him last year, we might have wound up in the finals. Nobody on the Boston Celtics looks at Gordon Hayward and says, man, if he had been healthy, we might have taken that next step. In fact, they look at it as he's not living up to his money, and we're not sure that he's living up to his minutes. I think that's where the real rub is in attempting to get Gordon Hayward to be of value and to be of the value of his contract, which I'm not sure is possible, even if he hadn't gotten hurt. that there are other guys looking at it saying, wait a minute, why are we sacrificing for this guy? And that ultimately is the rub. If this is all supposed to be about team, this is all supposed to be about we're supposed to do what's absolutely best for us collectively, and you're asking me to make that sacrifice, why are we sacrificing for that guy because it doesn't fit in the equation?
No, it's a great question. Do you think ultimately they sit him down, they take those minutes as we get to the stretch run?
I don't know, because I would have expected that they would have done it already. I'm not sure what the plan or the approach is. Brad Stevens and Danny Ainge are the only two who can ultimately answer that. And I could understand from Danny's standpoint, he made the investment that he would take the long view. But at some point, and maybe they feel as of right now, we don't have to do that. Yeah, we're disgruntled, but we're going to be in the playoffs. We've got the experience. We know what we're capable of. So let's try to bring Gordon along, because we believe that if we do play him and we do allow him to evolve, that he can be a contributing factor. And the flip side would be, we're going to put him aside and we're going to ride with the guys who can give it to us right now. If they're playing the long game and saying it doesn't matter right now whether we have a couple bumps in the road, it matters what do we have come mid-April. What are we then? And we think that we can get Gordon Hayward to a level that he's going to be a better contributor then than he is now. I can understand it. And I don't, if that's the thinking, then I'm okay with it. Even if there's some guys on the Celtics that aren't.
I think that's the thinking. I think they just think the more he plays, the better, but they may get to a place in which you're like, look, he's been working so hard just to get back to that level that it becomes counterproductive. Yeah. So I think it's fascinating. What about the Raptors? Does it feel to you like they're the most complete team? I know the Bucks had the better record, but you bring in a Kawhi who's won an NBA Finals MVP, a Danny Green with a group, Siakam starting to take off, and then they go and make a huge bold move at the trade deadline. Where are the Raptors in your mind with those top four teams in the East?
Oh, I think they're right there. I mean, for me, the Celtics and the Raptors are the top two teams in the Eastern Conference, and I would expect that one of those is going to come out of the East, largely because what they're capable of playing, how they're able to play defensively, and their depth, and obviously their hunger. I give the Celtics the edge over the Raptors simply because that group, without Kyrie Irving and Gordon Hayward, obviously, went to the Eastern Conference Finals. The collective experience they have of playing under that pressure, and then you add Kyrie, that shouldn't be a problem. We talked about, you know, I'm not sure exactly what you do with Gordon, but Toronto, I just haven't seen them as a group, and the guys that they are playing, that they are relying on the most, whether it's Kawhi from the outside or a guy like Siakam. What are they going to look like under the pressure of a game six on the road or a game seven at home? And can they execute? I've seen the Celtics. The Celtics have enough experience. I'm going to believe in them slightly more than I am the Toronto Raptors. And no game in February is going to convince me of anything.
All right, I'm with you. I think one of the things that's changed is the new TV deal has all these games on national TV, and it's much like Rick Bucher from Bleacher Report joining us. It's much like the fact that whether it was Korea or Vietnam was on people's television set every night gave us a completely different view of war. The same is true of the NBA. Because it's on national TV every night and because we don't pay as much attention at all to college basketball this time of year, it's front and center in our minds, and we're covering it at a much more micro level than we ever had previously. Yeah. Is that fair?
Yeah. Yep. No. Absolutely. And I think especially because this year with the East being so wide open, the question mark. I mean, if people aren't paying as much attention to the Western Conference, it's because they already, and I think mistakenly, maybe not mistakenly, but it's Golden State owns the West. I think that's the general prevailing notion. The Eastern Conference is a big question mark. So We're following the Geiger counter to see measuring the radioactivity of any particular team on any given night and trying to decide exactly what it means. And so, I think that's also why we're paying, we're giving so much credence to every single thing that's happening at this time of the year.
Rick Bucher joining us on the Doug Gottlieb Show. All right, let's get to the West. Things are not getting better for the Lakers. Why?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's the tragic flaw from the beginning of the year, which is this is not a team built for LeBron James to go where LeBron James wants to go. It is a young team. It's not a particularly adept shooting team. It's not a high IQ team. It doesn't have the connective tissue. Yes, it does have. It has veterans, but outside of Rajon Rondo, those veterans aren't the kind that can assist LeBron in leading the team. And so, you know, from the beginning of the year, I said, look, I see them scraping into the playoffs, but I only do that on the strength of LeBron James and his reputation and his ability, and I would assume his desire to get there. Now, did not take into account him getting injured and him having a groin injury, and then Rajon Rondo getting injured. I recorded a podcast today with Richard Jefferson, and he made the point. You know, they were fourth in the West when both Rajon and LeBron went down. And he looks at LeBron and says, you know what, I don't think it's the Father Time tapping him on the shoulder. I think he's injured for the first time, and he's struggling with that, and he's still not healthy. All that said, you put all those pieces together, and you put them in the Western Conference, and you put the heightened expectations of playing in a Lakers uniform, and you're going to get what you get. Do I think they can still make the playoffs? Absolutely, I do. Do I think that they're going to make any noise or that they're a title contender? Absolutely not.
I think they can make a noise. I don't think they're a title contender. But I'm struggling with the... I would agree with you in terms of the flaws of the roster. I actually think mm-hmm. they missed Lonzo Ball. I thought, you know, they shouldn't have let Brooke Lopez get away. I understand they were trying to do a solid by... with Clutch Sports, but what do they need Kentavious Caldwell-Pope for a second year? He stinks, and forget about how much money he takes up. Like, he's personally lost them games with some of his decisions at the end of games. So there's some decisions there that go to the front office, but they lost to Atlanta. They lost to Memphis. Yeah. They lost to the Pelicans. Like, these are not, it's not like they're losing, anybody can lose the Warriors. They beat the Rockets. Like, how can they not beat the non-playoff teams?
Yeah, well, but look, when things are in disarray, and honestly, I feel as if they're in disarray, they're capable of losing to anybody. I mean, let's face it, Boston Celtics lost to the Chicago Bulls. When you're not right, you're susceptible to just about anybody. And I think what those losses are actually accentuating is that LeBron, for all of our talk about him as a leader, he's always had some savvy veterans next to him who have been able to mollify his approach or help in terms of leading the team, maintaining a certain balance. And he doesn't have that right now. And so as a result, we're seeing all the leadership rest on him. You can't blame everybody else when you are not playing anywhere near your capability. And it may be because of injury, right?
How bad was his pulled groin?
I don't know. I mean, but that may be a factor. But if it is a factor, you can't be calling everybody out. And here's the thing, is that he's calling people out not based on their performance. He's calling them out based on their character.
Right.
If this situation is too big for you, if you're not about these things, then you don't belong here. That's not, we need to play harder. That's not, we need to execute better. That's, if you're not of the stuff made of contenders and playoff teams, if you're not mentally tough enough, that cuts a little deeper. That gets a little more personal. And these guys, young as they are, to hear that from LeBron James and knowing his history of getting rid of guys that he thinks are not up to his standard, that's going to rattle a young guy. However you want to slice it, what LeBron James is saying right now, from a leader standpoint, is not striking the right chord.
I tend to agree with you. Let me get to the Golden State Warriors. As you pointed out, and I've kind of said the same thing, we are crowning them a little prematurely. Am I wrong, or is DeMarcus, and it's early, but DeMarcus Cousins isn't necessarily making them better?
No, not by any stretch. Here's my issue, and I think you and I have talked about it before. Offensively, fine. And when he has played well, offensively is where he has contributed. And as a screen setter, as a passer, he's been good. He's been good playing with this group when he's played well. But defensively, he has taken them back another step, and they ill could have afforded that. And I just look at what the Houston Rockets have, what the Rockets just did, what the Miami Heat just did. They attack him at will and are outscoring the Warriors in the paint. And that is a direct reflection of DeMarcus Cousins having to show on the pick and roll. And if he does, if he comes out and cuts that off, the ball's going to the rim, and there's an agile big who's finishing it. He cannot do both, and that's the issue. And that's going to continue to be an issue.
Yeah, and look, they've always been able to hide Steph and his defensively. But to have to hide two guys, especially a big guy, that's a tough one. And that's one of the reasons their defensive numbers are so down.
The general rule in the NBA is that you can win a championship with 4.5 good defensive players, or let's say four good defensive players.
Can't do it with three.
Because you can't do it with three. And so, and then you add in, is Iguodala the same? Is Draymond Green the same?
No.
Is Klay Thompson the same defensively? I mean, you were able to hide one because everybody else was so damn good. Now everybody has maybe taken back a quarter step, half step, and now you're going to try to hide two. That math doesn't work for me.
Yep. And then the question is, these guys, will they be signing contracts on reputation, as opposed to how good they actually are? Like, what happens in a year from now with Draymond Green, who has not been the same player over the past year and a half or so?
Well, it's not only that, but it's okay. So you don't re-sign Draymond Green. Who are you signing? I mean, the assumption is that this train's just going to keep rolling without any interruption. And I'm looking at a lot of questions as far as if you sign Draymond Green, can he get back to what he was? And he absolutely has to, because Andre Iguodala, I don't know that you're re-signing him, and I certainly don't expect that he's going to turn back the clock. You have a lot of questions. You have a lot of questions here. And again, overall, it's simply the mental. I mean, I thought about this the other night. The drain for what, 4 years now of getting everybody's best shot every night. Every night it means so much to the opposition. For you to win that, yes, you know, the iron sharpens iron. You have to face that kind of test. It does hone you in a way, but it also wears you down. And you know, there's a reason why teams generally don't do what they've done or continue to do, because the mental and physical fatigue in riding the same horses is just too much.
Yeah. Hey, last thing for you, Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. Rick Bucher is our guest. You mentioned that LeBron's not playing nearly at the level that he's expected. Forget the top player in the league. Is he really a top five player in the league right now? Right now.
I'm going to say that he's... not knowing where the injury is, Do I think he's still capable of being a top five player? I think he's still capable of being a top three player. Do I think he's, the way he's playing right now, he's a top five player? It's hard for me to make that case because defensively he's not giving you a whole lot. And offensively he's not giving you everything that he could. And so ultimately, I just, you know, as of right now, what I'm seeing, no, he's not. Can he still be? I'd like to believe that he can.
You know, it's interesting, and I said that was the last one, I lied. What's in Rick Bucher, Bleacher Report, joining us in the Doug Gottlieb Show. What's interesting is, you know, Carmelo is, the one of the reasons he's out of the league is there's just nowhere you can hide him defensively, right? In addition to the fact that he's a mid-range shooter and a post-up guy, and that doesn't fit when you're an ancillary part, like, you just can't hide him defensively. I do wonder, if it's not injury, and this is just an older LeBron James, he becomes a tough guy to hide defensively, as brilliant a basketball mind as he is.
Because who do you have that's going to help you hide him? And two, you know what he's capable of. And so, I mean, the bigger thing, though, is, let's be honest, he hasn't been a very good defensive player for some time now.
No question, but it gets exposed more, one, the older he is, and two, the way the league changes, right? Like,
the way, the personnel that you have. And here's the other part. Like, again, this kind of goes back to the formation of the team. When you had a bunch of veterans who knew their job, I'm going all the way back to the Allen Iverson team that Larry Brown took to the final. All those guys knew, those guys all knew, Allen's the star, we do all the dirty work. We defend, we give it up, we do all that stuff.
Yep.
You don't have a bunch of Lakers who are looking at it and saying, we got to do all the dirty work. You know, Kyle Kuzma's not looking at, I got to do the dirty work. He's looking at Brandon Ingram. I'm dirty work, like, you're supposed to help me become a 20-7 guy. And so the mindset is just completely wrong for what LeBron needs. And again, when it comes to leadership, I said this at the beginning of the year Doug, which was, if this team was going to maximize what it was, LeBron James was going to have to devote all of his energy to the defensive end of the floor. Because offensively, I felt like they did have enough talent there. But that he was going to have to, like, by demonstrate, it's a little bit like Kobe on the Redeem team. Like, I'm going to show you, by my sacrifice, I'm going to make all you guys better, and then you damn well better sacrifice at that end too, and the offense will take care of itself. And that simply hasn't happened.
Great stuff from Rick Bucher from Bleacher Report, who joined us on the Doug Gottlieb Show. Buke, thanks so much, dude.
You got it, Doug.